Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Mark Casello, Jeannie Ives, John Kochelko, and Kitty Kurth. Our program tonight coming from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. And if you'd like to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo, @DUMO. And, of course, if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, you can go to our website, beyondthebeltway.com. It's our website. It's where the streaming media can be found each and every Sunday night. We have lots to talk about. Obviously, there was the debate last week, the early debate, the later debate, who won the debate. We'll be talking about those things. And then, of course, there were the comments made during the debate and then after the debate by who else? Donald Trump. The controversy surrounds him wherever he goes. Today, he spent most of the time going on the major Sunday morning shows, trying to explain comments that he made in an interview with CNN after the debate last week. In which he was complaining about Megyn Kelly and her questions of him at the debate, specifically the first one. And this is what he had to say. She starts asking me all sorts of ridiculous questions. And, you know, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her whatever, end of quote. Now, that's what he said to CNN after the debate. A lot of people, Republicans, Democrats, certainly liberals, conservatives, they took that answer to mean that there was some reference to Megyn Kelly in a hormonal way. Donald Trump was on the air today saying only a deviant would think that was what he meant, that he was thinking, you know, blood coming out of your nose and your ears. That's what he said in his interviews today on all the shows, trying to clean up what he said. So I'm going to begin. Jeannie Ives, you're a state representative, a Republican, and you join us tonight. I want to get everyone's reaction, first of all, to what Donald Trump said initially, and then what he's been trying to, the story he's been trying to peddle today. Do you believe it?
I don't believe his story one bit about how he's backtracking on his comments from the night before. I listened to his comments. I mean, he comes off as just ridiculous. I mean, you can't take him at face value when he's attacking people like that. I mean, if you're a politician, you've got to learn how to answer the question. And what Donald doesn't understand is that you give him the information that you want to convey. You don't really answer their question. He's not a pro at that yet.
John Kochelko or other Republican?
Well, it reminds me of something that Sam Rayburn said about the men around John Kennedy. He said, I wish that some of them had run for sheriff once somewhere. Mm-hmm. When you run for president as the first political office you've ever sought, you haven't made the mistakes early on in your career that most people make when they're working their way up the ladder. And you haven't learned to be careful of what your words and careful of your language. I don't know what he meant. I'm not sure if he meant the interpretation that has been given by his critics. Perhaps he didn't mean it the way it was said. But it certainly came out in such a way that gives his critics an opportunity to hammer him.
Kitty Kurth, one of our Democrats. Kitty, you're cheering. You're gleeful that all this problem is happening on the Republican side. But
interested bystander. But I guess I'm a deviant because I kind of believed him at his first word. And, you know, tone is everything. It wasn't something that he wrote. It wasn't something in Twitter and Facebook where you can get into trouble easily in words because you can't tell tone in a written word. But you could tell tone in Trump's original statement. And I think, you know, it's great that he tried to backpack, but it was just that. He was trying to backpedal.
Mark Casello also joins us. We're sharing microphones this evening. We've got a little microphone problem. But tell us your interpretation of what was said and the impact of it.
So, I mean, Trump's running for the Republican nomination. It's the party where character is supposed to matter. And Trump's built up a reputation of saying things that offend groups. And even Megyn Kelly's original question that caused this whole kerfuffle indicate that he said negative things, derogatory things about women, that he thinks of women primarily by their appearance, or that's how he seeks to criticize them. So I think he's wading into some difficult waters here, and I understand why everybody pounced on it.
I want to kind of broaden the conversation, and please don't anyone interpret this as defending Donald Trump in what he said, because it was inappropriate. No matter how you interpreted it, it was inappropriate. But the crux of his concern was Megyn Kelly's question, whether it was a fair question, and also the other questions when you put them into context from the Fox moderators. Brett Baer, first question. I mean, they had the lead to that debate when his hand went up. That 30 seconds into the debate, there was the lead in that debate when he said he would not acknowledge that he would absolutely support the winner of the Republican primary. Then later on, Chris Wallace was doggedly pursue him on the issue of bankruptcy. So my question to you, John, because I think you and Jeannie are probably fans of Fox News, were the Fox News questions fair? And were they equal insofar as the premise of the question to all of the other candidates on that podium? John.
I don't think they were fair to Trump. I think that first hand-raising question was a setup. He had already announced some time back that he would not commit himself to supporting the Republican nominee unless he saw how he was treated. So they knew the answer to that question. There was no news there. That was done deliberately, it seems, to set him up, to put him in a bad light with the audience. And I thought Megyn Kelly's question was extremely hostile. This was not an impartial journalist asking a question. She had an agenda. She did indeed come off as being a bit angry as she asked the question. And I think it's understandable that he reacted to it. And he has a reputation that when he's challenged, he fights back.
Jeannie,
that's why many people like
Jeannie
him.
Ives, how do you see it?
No, I would definitely agree. I believe that Fox basically set Trump up, but they did it with the other candidates as well. I mean, they definitely set up Scott Walker with the abortion question coming off. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how Mark makes the supposition that we are the party where character is supposed to count. Well, does that say that the Democrats aren't the party where character counts and they can get away with anything? I mean,
We don't brag about it and say that we're character, we're people. But I thought all of the Fox journalists did a really good job of being journalists. They asked very tough questions, which, as you recall, John King got bashed for asking tough questions in the debates 4 years ago. They asked tough questions. That's what happens in a debate. That's why I thought it was fascinating that Trump all week said, I'm not preparing for the debate. I'm not preparing for the debate. If he had done just one 5-minute debate prep, those would have been the three most obvious questions.
Here's the one thing, and by the way, part of this is that Megyn Kelly is a superstar. She's a superstar of journalism. She's a superstar of the conservative cause. But I will say this. That first question, with all of the issues facing the world, mm-hmm. with all of the issues that 300 million people care about, she used that valuable first question to ask a question to make her look good, a gotcha question that will make her look good. And the next time she walks into a press room in Washington, D.C., she'll be cheered and she'll be viewed as an objective a journalist, and I do believe that with all the questions that came by Fox, I think whether it was conspiratorial or not, I think part of what they wanted to do is they wanted to be viewed as respectable and credible to their colleagues because they're tired of being pointed at as partisans for the Republican Party.
I think they went into it
with that in plan. That's my opinion. I want to get everybody's reaction. I've got to go off for a break. 1-800-723-8289. Let us know how you feel about what I just said. Back shortly.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later, and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Chicago, thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. Mark Casello, you wanted to comment on my my review of the Fox moderators and what the ulterior motive might have been for their hard questioning the other night.
Sure. Well, in particular, you were talking about Megyn Kelly and the fact that you thought it was sort of a personal move on her part to ask this question.
As question number one.
As question number one. But I think it was very astute and smart, given that if the 2012 election became about race in America, this is going to be an election about gender and the relationships between men and women. If you look at that top 10 debate, there was no woman on that stage. And we're going to be running against Hillary Clinton, who's going to put the million cracks in the glass ceiling. And I think Megyn Kelly's aware of that, acutely aware of that fact. And I think that question was, you know, meant to unsettle Trump and really probe that dynamic.
It was meant to unsettle Trump. I want to just follow up on that. That was the motivation in your view. John Kochelko.
Well, I think that the proof of the pudding is that in the aftermath of the debate, Fox News was praised by the New York Times. And I think that says it all. I would love one day to see ABC, CBS, or NBC to see their commentators direct the same kind of hostile questions to a Democrat. Or to a panel
do.
Of Democrats. No, they don't.
Okay.
The way the Fox News people directed these questions to Trump. Remember when Major Barrett asked a tough question of President Obama a few weeks ago, and the media was really down on his back. His brethren were upset with him. Charlie Rose asked him if he was willing to walk that back on CBS Morning News the following day. They didn't like the fact that Major Barrett had been disrespectful to the greatest man who ever lived.
Speak to my point. Do you agree or disagree with my point?
First of all, Megyn Kelly was asking a question on behalf of the majority of the voters. The majority of the voters in 2016 will be women. She was asking a question about how Donald Trump treats the majority of the voters. I think it was eminently fair.
You think it was really question number one?
Absolutely.
It was the most important
it
question.
It was a very tough question, but those debates have a history of tough questions. If you look at what John King got in loads of trouble 4 years ago for asking one of the candidates a tough question. Bernie and
Shaw
asked Mike Dukakis about Kitty Dukakis being raped.
And he took a lot of crap for it, pardon my French.
And so The journalists always will take crap for the hard questions, but their job is to ask the hard questions.
I don't know if that was a
that's
hard question.
That's what the debates
I think
are all
Dukakis
about.
Dukakis gave a terrible
well,
answer.
Well, Mike Dukakis
he
felt
gave
it was
terrible
a very
answer
hard
to what could have been a very could have been
how,
easy
how
hitting
about
the home
back,
run.
Back to the debate last night. I mean, the truth is that Fox didn't need to do this. You say that they were trying to prove their bona fides as actual fair and balanced and impartial. Yeah. And they don't
to
need
their
to.
College.
Yeah, to their colleagues.
The broader community.
I don't think that they need to. They have record viewership. They had 24 million
And they
million
are not
people.
Fair and balanced. They are absolutely
sorry,
not
I'm
fair
talking.
And balanced.
But they had 24 million people tuning into that debate last night.
Yeah.
They had no reason other than present whatever questions were forthcoming. There was no need for this at all. People watch Fox regardless.
Mark.
So I would, you know, in the wake of Jon Stewart's resignation this week and his constant critique of the media, one thing that he was very good at pointing out was that we ask a lot of things that seem like they're hard questions. Like the Fox questions were kind of like very petty and petulant sounding, like you're such a loser. Why do you deserve to be on the stage, right, in the pre-bait or the kids' table debate?
Yeah.
But they asked a lot of questions that seemed very harsh in tone. But the scope of the questions was very narrow. Black Lives Matter got one question, then off to commercial after Scott Walker says, let's train police better. So it was an illusion of journalistic fortitude and toughness, but it was really an illusion of coverage.
Disagree. I disagree with that. They blatantly forgot to ask Governor Perry about his record on improving job growth. They skipped over him when it came to jobs growth.
Or criminal
which
justice.
Which is really unfortunate. He has quite the story to tell, and I felt from that standpoint, they didn't ask the right questions to the right people.
Do you think, going back to the earlier debate, do you agree with everyone else that Carly Fiorina won that hands down?
Absolutely. You know why? Because she speaks to the person's heart. She talks about first principles and the principles that would guide her in every situation. She doesn't talk in just simple one-offs or
doesn't ramble.
She's on target, on part. You can tell that she is a principled person because you know when you walk into any elected office, you don't know what you're going to have to make a decision on. And she proved up there that she has guiding principles that will guide her conduct and how she views the world. So
Jack
that's Kuchelko. Huge.
Carly Fiorina is one of the people I'm very impressed with, and I hope that she will be in the Class A debate the next time, and she will not be relegated with the secondary team. But she's one of those that is making very good points, and I hope to hear more from her.
Well, again, she was on one of the on the CNN with Jake Tapper today, but she wasn't on with Meet the Press. She was yet according to the polls. And by the way, let's go over this.
She was on Fox News today.
She was on Fox today, and I thought she did
very
a terrific job.
Very
what
good.
Did you think of Carly Fiorina?
I thought she did well, and actually, I thought that all of the candidates in the Kids Table Happy Hour, which I think was a really crappy way to do it. Sorry to
well,
bring
that's
up
a crappy
before.
Way to identify it.
Exactly.
That's
how it was.
Using that.
But that's how the media identified it. I'm not the media, but that's how they identified it. And I thought it was very unfair. I thought a system of drawing lots and having not telling people until right before who was going to be in the debate would have been much fairer. But I thought they all did a really good job. I thought they came prepared. I don't think anybody looked like they should have been at a kids' table or happy hour debate. I thought they all could have taken the stage later, and I thought it was extremely unfair to all of those candidates to have an empty arena. It's so hard to get any traction or any feedback when there's no one in the audience. You can't get any energy from it. You can't gauge how you're doing. I thought it was extremely unfair, but I
think
they
that
all
Carly
held their own.
Is Carly Fiorina, in your mind, do you think that she's move to become a serious candidate for president?
I think as the weeks go on and she gets more experience, she will be. But as John pointed out, it's extremely hard to run for office for the president of the United States when you've never run for any office. She did run for office, but ran a really bad campaign and got trounced. But I think had she held another office, had she gone to Congress or something or governor, she would have a much better campaign. But I think she did okay. Interestingly to me, she sounded, when I was watching the debate, she did not look as good. When I heard the debate on the radio, she sounded a lot better. So it was an interesting dichotomy.
That's a very sexist thing to say.
I was surprised. But the same thing Lindsay
You're commenting on her looks?
I would totally disagree.
You're commenting on her looks?
Yeah.
You're commenting on her looks?
No, it wasn't. It was a Nixon-Kennedy question. It was hearing somebody versus seeing somebody. Lindsey Graham
was a lot. When you look at her, she's authentic.
Lindsey Graham was a lot better on television than he was on radio. Carly, just the opposite.
Okay, Jeannie, and then we're going to go to...
I disagree. She spoke with an authoritative persona, and it resonated. You know that she believes what she believes. It comes through. And that's the nice thing about the Republican candidates. All of them, in their own right, and I would include Trump in this, are authentic and believable. And they have all. They all have a record of performance, which I think that the Democrat candidates
Don't. Rick, I thought Rick Perry did a good job in the first debate. It wasn't quite
a little aggressive, but
Not quite as I think Carly Fiorina blew it away. And by the way, I'm gonna admit something today. When I have thought of Carly Fiorina in the past, I thought, what a great running mate! What a great running mate! When I saw her on Fox today, it's the first time I've said, you know what? She really could be president.
Sure.
I mean, insofar as the way she handled herself, I don't know whether the Republican Party is willing to knock all those others away and whether she can fight and win it all the way. But I viewed her today in a far different way than I did last Thursday.
And it's interesting that the party that calls itself the Party of Women, the chairman of that party, blasted her right after the debate. Just blasted every aspect of her career in a way that would bring the roof down if a Republican were to speak that way about Hillary Clinton. But because of the fact that the Democrats doing that about Carly Fiorina, just news. It's just an ordinary development in the reign of American
politics.
Let's
take a call from Mark listening to us in Lincoln, Illinois, on Sirius XM satellite radio. Go ahead, listening to POTUS tonight. Go ahead, Mark.
How you doing today?
Well, hi.
I want to say I support Megyn Kelly on her question, and I'll tell you why. Because as the debates were going on, Hillary Clinton was with, who was it, the Kardashian and whoever, or Sean Combs or whoever it is, that she's with this week. She was talking about how the war against women. So here we are. This is what we're going to face. We better get it out there, what Trump has said. Furthermore, the first question, which Brett Baird said, I think is also good. The voters need to know if this guy loses, it's like Rand Paul said, he's hedging his bets. If he goes, he may even support Hillary Clinton if he loses.
That's true.
Or if he goes to a third party. So we better get it out there. People better hear about it now before they go supporting him.
By the way, my point about Megan's question was not so much that she asked it. I just didn't think it was the first question. Debate, her first question, it seemed to me, was good also. Let's go to Nick listening to us in Chicago. Go ahead. You're on the air. Nick, go ahead. Nick, are you there?
Trump represents a protest vote for the GOP voters. I mean, we're tired. We're tired of them saying one thing then doing another. They get elected, they said they were going to overturn Obamacare, and then they do another. So we're not stupid. We've caught on that these rhino Republicans are not going to do what they're being told. So, he represents a protest vote. I mean, what's the difference between a rhino Republican and a Democrat? None.
Jeannie?
Oh, you're absolutely right. There is no doubt that people are fed up, and Trump has tapped into it. I think Ted Cruz has tapped into that. I think Walker could have tapped into it more, quite frankly, because he embodies the idea of pushing back against big government and big government unions, and I want to hear more about that from him. But you're right. Yeah. People are fed up with these Republicans
doing nothing.
We have
to lose, so be it.
Okay, listen, thanks very much for your call. We do appreciate it. Thanks very much for your call. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to talk about a recent survey that was done asking the question, who won the debate, who lost the debate? You may be surprised by some of the answers. Back shortly.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sit cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Dumont, thanks very much for joining us tonight. Let's let our guests introduce themselves. First of all, we begin with a Democrat, Kitty Kurth.
Good evening. I'm Kitty Kurth. I'm the president of Kurth Lampe Worldwide. We do communications and political strategy all over the place.
John Kuchelko.
John S. Kuchelko. I got into politics fresh out of graduate school. I served in the Illinois General Assembly and the Cicero Town Board, and I enjoy doing public speaking, portraying public figures.
Mark Casello.
I'm Mark Casello. I'm an assistant professor of American literature at Calumet College of St. Joseph, and I also oversee their communications program.
And making your maiden voyage on our program, Jeannie Ives. Jeannie?
Hi, I'm Jeannie Ives. I'm the mother of five children. My oldest is in Ranger School. He's on my mind all the time right now. And I'm a West Point graduate, and I serve in the Illinois State Legislature.
And you're a captain. You were a captain.
I was a captain in the U.S. Army, served 6 years, and then became a full-time mother.
Very good. Thanks very much. Nice. That's our guest for this evening, 1-800-723-8289. We'll go to calls in just a moment. But today on Meet the Press, they did a survey in concert with SurveyMonkey. So I don't know how authentic this was, but it's SurveyMonkey is a web-related survey that a lot of people are familiar with. And they asked Republican voters who won the debate. And this is the responses were somewhat interesting. Carly Fiorina was at 22%, Donald Trump 18%, Marco Rubio 13%, Ted Cruz 12%, Ben Carson 8%, Mike Huckabee 5%, and then we continue, Ron Paul at 3%, Walker at 3%, and then tied for last, or with 2%, Bush, Kasich, or Christie and Kasich. Now, the question was also asked, who lost the debate? Well, Donald Trump also lost the debate, according to these people, 29%, with 14% for Paul, 11% for Bush, 9% for Christie, and 8% for Graham. So I want to ask Jeannie this question. By the way, I did the post-debate analysis or phone call reaction on 560 AM, The Answer. And I was surprised. Most of the people that responded to that show thought that Ted Cruz won. So my question to you is, because you alluded to Ted Cruz a little bit a little while ago, were you surprised that he didn't use his time better or didn't stand out more?
Yes, and I think to some degree that's a function of him having been a senator and not a governor and not able to speak about specific accomplishments that he has been able to take, credit for. So I think that was probably more of it. But again, I mean, people like Ted Cruz, because he's just like Carla Fiorina in that he talks from a standpoint of first principles and the Constitution and things that matter in our long time tenements we have to keep track of.
My other observation was that Scott Walker was almost, I mean, he wasn't bad. He wasn't great. He was just, he sort of blended in with the woodwork. Mm-hmm. Mark, would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I was expecting much more from Scott Walker, considering he fought those recall elections,
yeah.
and he's been seen as this great outsider, and he's actually leading as far as those big conservative principles, as far as attacking, you know, dismantling union authority and cutting taxes, and so he should have come out much stronger.
He sort of paled in comparison to Kasich. Kasich was coming with that resume over and over again, and the mailman, his father, the mailman.
Sure.
We've heard that in every utterance. John, what'd you think?
What I think is fascinating about the poll is you see all the conservatives clustered at the top and all the more establishment candidates down at the bottom.
Yeah.
And I think that says something about where the heart of the Republican Party is. I thought that basically when you get away from this whole fixation with Donald Trump, the conservatives really shined in that election. Cruz, Carson, Huckabee all did superbly well, I thought.
I think the fact that we haven't really mentioned Chris Christie or Jeb Bush, and we're 37
right.
minutes into the program, is pretty telling.
Well,
because
Chris Christie,
think 6 months ago, if you had asked us who we would be talking about tonight, it would have been Chris Christie and Jeb Bush.
Chris Christie, who I thought gave a fairly strong presentation, but again, Chuck Todd caught him in an absolute falsehood. He said on a couple of times during that debate in a retort with Ron Paul that he became the U.S. attorney on September 10th, the day before the attack on the World Trade Center. And it was proven today that that's not the case. He said it twice. It was a Brian Williams moment. It wasn't the truth. He embellished on it. And I have always thought that Christie is a long shot. Mm-hmm. And the other point is I thought that Kasich, I was surprised that the media, they all put Kasich as someone that really did well that night, even though he was playing to hometown crowd. I was surprised that according to the Survey Monkey with NBC and Meet the Press results, that Kasich only came in at 2%. So maybe
I'm surprised.
Yeah, because I thought he was hitting home runs.
Well, actually, he's got a record of accomplishment, really, and work experience and history there. I mean, his taking on expansion of Medicaid is problematic for conservatives, but he does have a good long time, you know, service record, and he.
When I worked in D.C., he was in Congress, and he was one of the champions of working across party lines and working on budget issues. And back when we had a balanced budget and then a surplus under Bill Clinton, and John Kasich was one of the Republicans who really worked hard on that and really was a real budget expert. I was surprised he didn't talk more about federal issues, although there weren't a lot of issues really talked about in
but
the
also
debate
the,
at all.
The first time he had an opportunity to speak, John, the first thing he was talking about was criminal justice reform. Mm-hmm. I mean, he, without saying the words compassionate conservative, I mean, that's what he was talking about. He was talking about the mentally ill, those in prison, those with addictions, and what he's doing in Ohio, which again, he was playing to a general election audience, and he got big cheers because he was in his hometown, but I don't know how well those are going to play,
The media is thrilled with John Kasich. I don't know how well his pipeline to St. Peter is going to wear with conservatives. I think if he had said that, you know, St. Peter is going to ask you, what did you do to protect the lives of unborn children, the roof would have caved in on him. The media would not be praising him today for saying that. But because he was politically correct and saying, in effect, that St. Peter is going to wave liberal Democrats right into heaven and stop conservatives at the door because they reduced the budget, that's getting a lot of applause from the liberal media.
Jeannie, and everybody's response, because Kitty, you just alluded to, you know, Jeb Bush. We haven't talked about Jeb Bush, and he had some good moments, but he was just sort of there. He looked presidential. He looked probably the most presidential. But my question to you is he the John Connolly of this campaign? Is he the guy that's going to have all the money and end up being having to go back to all these huge funders and explain to him why he didn't click with the voters?
I think it's too early to tell. We're one debate in to apparently nine debates coming up. I think it's too early to tell with any of these candidates what they are, they can and cannot do. I think what needs to happen is they all need to articulate a position of where they stand on their principles. And to some degree, Kasich did that. He came out with where his principles are.
So did Rand Paul.
And that resonated. Rand Paul came off as just kind of
angry.
Yep. I did not understand
him.
And I think if they can articulate themselves from that standpoint, that you're going to get some more conservatives to maybe not maybe take – the conservatives aren't going to take a glance at Jeb Bush, but maybe you'll get some independents.
At one point, there was a split-screen conversation between Kasich and Rubio. And that split screen was up there, and when it went flashed through my eyes, I said, there's the ticket right there. That's the ticket.
Yeah.
Would that be a tough ticket for the Democrats to beat?
Yeah, I've been saying this all along. The Kasich, to me, represents the greatest threat, specifically because he's the only one who does mention what he called the people in the shadows, which I don't know if I like that term, which he basically was saying minorities. I do like the idea that he's speaking about mental health. He's speaking about prison reform.
But
also,
isn't that the kiss of death? When an avowed liberal like you says you like John Kasich, John is nodding. Boy,
right.
It's like the New York Times praising Fox News. So kiss of death.
It could very well be. But the second thing I would say is depending on how you're looking, what you were basing your criteria on for these surveys, Marco Rubio is really working on emulating the rhetoric of sounding presidential. It's as if he's been studying Ronald Reagan tapes. And,
I know.
You know, and
he still looks so young.
He does.
But
he does.
Trying really
but
hard.
He's trying very hard, and it works.
He was trying really hard, and I don't mean to sound condescending. He really was working really hard. He's a young guy. He's been in office
very
for a long time.
Very political and very smart.
Very political, and when he was in the state legislature in Florida, he was very political, some of which he got in trouble for. But he's trying really hard to overcome how young he looks. He was trying to emulate Ronald Reagan's rhetoric, which you could do a lot worse than
as does Rick Perry.
Looking awfully young is exactly what Lyndon Johnson said about John F. Kennedy in 1960.
Exactly. Yep. Sure. Jeannie?
No, I mean, Marco Rubio, actually, when I talk to my colleagues around the state, they like Marco Rubio. A number of them like Marco Rubio. And I'm kind of surprised by that, I guess.
Is it generational as much as it is his philosophy?
I think philosophy.
The fact that he's young and fresh
would be
an incredible counterpoint to Hillary Clinton, if indeed she survives and becomes the nominee. Mark.
What I want to say about Rubio that made him stand out for me among the other candidates is, especially on these immigration talks, he was the only one who took the moment to explain that these immigrants are actually coming from Guatemala and Honduras,
yes.
You know, El Salvador. He was actually aware and had some subtlety and nuance to his positions. It wasn't some, we're going to build a fence, and boy, what a fence it shall be. So I appreciated that, and even a leftist like me can admit that at least he was creating a more nuanced conversation.
As I referenced that the two shot that was up there. I mean, I would see the ticket as Kasich and Rubio as the vice president, because first of all, there's an age difference, and I just think that, frankly, I think governors make better presidents, and I think this is about governing, and I think there's a lot of governors, former and current governors, that are running, a lot of senators, and I think the ultimate mix is probably going to be a governor and a senator, unless there's a former corporate 500 woman who is added to that ticket. Back shortly.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit
that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Back, John Kuchelko, you wanted to make a point, and then we're going to calls.
You know, when Lincoln was pressured by people to get rid of Ulysses S. Grant, he said, "I can't spare this man. He fights." And that's what's happened with Donald Trump. That's why he's resonated with conservatives and Republicans. He fights. He is not like the typical Republican who, when challenged by the left, crumbles, caves in, apologizes, promises never to do it again, and begs forgiveness. When Trump is hit, he hits back hard. And that's what conservatives are looking for. What they really don't want in this coming
election. That's what the media doesn't like.
That's what they don't like about him. They don't want another polite, dignified loser who's going to stand up on election night next year and say how proud he was to be a part of history as America elects its first woman president, and let's all get behind our new president.
Something else
they don't want
he
that.
Also, the media, the public, and Donald Trump, they don't want to take any guff from any reporter.
Absolutely.
Even
absolutely.
If it's the most popular
that's right.
reporter on Fox.
So when he talks back to reporters, that's not going to sink him. That's certainly not going to sink him with
unless,
a Republican audience.
Unless it's Megan Fox. And unless he makes unfortunate statements, which can be misinterpreted, certainly, you know, he spent the whole day trying to explain what he said. But I think a lot of people heard, a lot of women, not just women, they viewed it differently. You wanted to talk about.
Well, I just wanted to mention Ben Carson because I was expecting a bit more from him. I thought he came across, as an intelligent, articulate person and sort of charming.
He's not going to be president.
Policy-wise, he seemed to lack depth.
But again, he's raising lots of money, and a lot of people love him. And he's a decent man. But I hate to say to his funders, he's not going to be the president.
Trump's not the only man that's authentic out there. We've got Ted Cruz that came off as authentic. Yeah. You've got Carly Fiorina that came off as authentic. Rick Perry, they come off as authentic, real people that will push back against big government, big policies, and that's what's resonating with the voters. And we're fortunate we have so many good candidates in our Republican field that will push back.
And we're going to talk about Bernie Sanders in a moment, but let's go to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, a key pivotal state in who is the Republican nominee. Larry, how did you think your senior senator, Lindsey Graham, did?
He seemed frightened. I don't know.
Yes.
I, I thought it was like a Boehner moment, like he was ready to cry.
Yes.
He just seemed full of emotion being up there. So
yes, and this is the second time. I mean, when he starts to talk about, you know, the death of his mother and the death of his father within a year from each other, that is, I understand, you know, I mean, his whole life has been a difficult life because of that. That's happened to a number of people. But I thought literally he was on the verge, and he's so much passion about the role that the military needs to play, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan. But to me, he's on the edge. He looked like he was going to become unraveled at any moment.
Yeah. Listen, what prompted me to call, the initial question by Kelly, I think was an unpresidential question. I think if Trump had played it like Newt Gingrich played a similar type question during the South Carolina primary of a few years back, he could have just come out strong. As you'll recall, the question posed to Newt was about his ex-wife who was dying of cancer.
Right.
And Newt basically just flipped it around. There's a lot of us angry out here. We're losing our country. And to ask a question of essentially a personal nature, we know that Donald Trump is boorish. We know he's crude. Crude, by the way, these days played pretty well in the burbs. I'm old enough to remember when we were not such a crude society. I remember when a toilet flushed on All in the Family, and that was outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
Today, the world has changed. So Trump has his audience, but he's absolutely playing into the anger that we have out here.
Did it bother you the question about whether or not he would run as a third party candidate? Do you consider yourself a Republican? And do you think that if he does not win the nomination, that he really would run as a third party candidate?
No, I don't think he would run. It did trouble me. I think he's a businessman first. And I think he understands leverage. He even made note of that. And by the way, prior to the entire event, he stated several times that he would reserve the right to run as a third-party
right.
candidate. So this was obviously a tee-up to make him look bad. And by the way, that home field advantage that you alluded to with Kasich or Kasich, I'm not sure how to pronounce
yeah.
it, I'm a big fan of having zero people in the auditorium. I thought the first event where Carly Fiorina just knocked it out of the park. There was no applause, no people screaming, no chanting, like a high school baseball or football game.
Yeah.
Much more enjoyable and more substantive.
No, I agree, but it was a Fox pep rally, and they handle it like a pep rally. You know, one other point that's not been stated about Trump, and obviously we're talking about his bravado, and he's saying things, and he's touching a nerve, and saying things that a lot of voters are thinking about. I talk about the Trump appeal. This is a guy who was the lead guy on an immensely successful television show.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
week in, week out, the American people, many of them who are young demographically, good demographics for that show, they watch this guy hold people accountable for what they did. You yeah. did this. You were good. You're good. You're fired. I mean, talking in such a way, it's the accountability. And I'm thinking, I could picture Donald Trump at a cabinet meeting. I mean, the issue of, you know, can you imagine if Donald Trump was president of the United States and the issue of the rollout of his care program got screwed up because if somebody didn't know how to work, you know, they didn't know enough about
Sebelius
the internet.
Sebelius would have been fired.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, the point is.
And the private company that did the website.
That's right. But that's part of, I think, his appeal. Is that he holds people accountable, and he doesn't let them get, even celebrities, he doesn't let them get away with an inferior product or inferior conduct. And I think that's part of his appeal.
Vladimir Putin would not enjoy his first summit meeting with Donald Trump.
Oh, no.
Actually, I think they'd be two peas in a pod. I think they would go off riding together. Think about that first meeting between
Scott Walker and Vladimir
yeah.
Putin.
Can we talk
feel
about
the same way about that?
Absolutely.
We can
Fox
talk about everything.
Absolutely.
We can talk about everything in the second hour. Our guests will all be back. They're so phenomenal. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast, border to border, and around the world. You can also email me a question, BruceDumont@museum.tv, or tweet me a comment @Dumo. Back shortly after news. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week.
headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
What does it take to start something? A little time. A little exercise. A little laugh. A little adventure. A little help. That's all it takes to make a big impact.
As he always talks about, he had people in his life that really helped him out, and he wants to be that person in my life.
Just like he is, I was like that at 14. I know exactly what it means to be a 14-year-old guy.
I think that's why we have a good relationship.
He's fun and cool and nice.
You get to see like how personality develops.
Our friendship is good.
At Big Brothers Big Sisters, a little bit of your support can go a long way towards making matches like these happen.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway, coming to you from the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight featuring commentary by Mark Casello, Jeannie Ives, John Kochelko, and Kitty Kurth. Our program tonight coming to you from the Museum of Broadcast Communications, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you'd like to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And again, we're live on the Internet, beyondthebeltway.com, each and every Sunday night. Let's go to Ron, listening to us in Sacramento, California. He's been standing by, listening to us on KTKZ. That's the Salem station in Sacramento. Go ahead.
Hi. I think whatever you think of Trump, his message really resonates. The people are fed up with that. The border has been so insecure for so long, and it just speaks volumes about the incompetence of Washington. And one other thing, I think, which you shouldn't pass today without commentary, the 70th anniversary of Nagasaki.
Yes.
And when you look into details, the whole World War II thing was mass murder instigated by Masonic psychopaths, Stalin and FDR, and executed by, I guess, the dumbest generation. And read Pat Buchanan's great book, World War II, The Unnecessary War. And VeteransToday.com will connect a lot of dots.
John Kochelko is shaking his head as you're speaking. Ron, go ahead.
Well, I mean, the war was caused by many, many factors, but not by the Masons. It was caused by Adolf Hitler and Tojo and others. But, you know, the story of the bombing of Nagasaki is fascinating. No one knows the name of the city of Kokura, But Kokura was actually designated to be the second target of the second atomic bomb. But on the morning of August the 9th, Kokura was overshadowed with fog. And the B-29 called Boxcar, not Boxcar B-O-X, but B-O-C-K, named for the captain of the plane, Boxcar made three runs over Kokura that morning, but they could not find the aiming target, which was an arsenal along a riverbank. And so after the third run, they decided to go on to their secondary target, which was Nagasaki. Flak was already beginning to come up. But the interesting thing is that Nagasaki was also overshadowed by fog. They just barely found their aiming target at Nagasaki. And if they had not dropped the bomb on Nagasaki, there was a naval admiral, a man named Ashworth, who was actually in operational control of that bomb under General Groves. He would have had the final say as to what the next target would have been if they couldn't drop it on Nagasaki. And in the plane, he was considering Tokyo. He was considering that if they couldn't hit Nagasaki, wow, the next place would have been Tokyo, which conceivably would have destroyed the government, conceivably would have killed the emperor and the imperial family, and would have changed the whole complexion. So the story of the bombing, and it was just a fluke. There was an opening in the clouds. They saw the aiming target. They dropped the bomb on Nagasaki.
I mentioned during the break that today is the 70th anniversary of a memorable moment in television, because it was the dropping of the second atomic bomb on Nagasaki 70 years ago today that was the beginning of what is now network television. It was the first time when a local station in Washington, D.C., owned by Alan Dumont, my uncle, had a transmission in Washington, D.C., simultaneous with the same transmission in New York City. First time that had ever happened before, and thus the beginning of network television, 70 years ago today.
Well, it's interesting that we're talking about this topic, because I'm hoping we're getting into the Iran deal.
Yes.
And how that is so frightening when you
Which
think
hardly
about...
came up at all the other night.
Yes, yes.
Let's talk about it. How important is it to you?
It's very important. I have two sons in the military right now. One's in Ranger School. The other one's at West Point. And when you go into war, it's got to be a total, complete effort, as it was in World War II. We were relentless in bombing all sorts of targets in Germany, softening up the country for the invasion that needed to happen and the control that had to happen. So when you go into war, it's got to be a total war effort, and the country has to be behind you. And I don't see this in this commander-in-chief. And for him to negotiate a deal like Iran with all the unknowns that we have, and 24-day notice before there's any sort of inspection, it's laughable. It's actually not laughable. It's abominable. It scares me, quite frankly.
Right, Kitty. Now, we have no notice and no inspections. A 24-day notice, what it actually means is they can go in any time. The 24 days is obfuscation.
That is not true.
And
that's not true.
BS, frankly.
That is absolutely not true. That is absolutely not true.
John Kerry was on explaining the whole deal to the Congress, and he said...
No, John Kerry said he hadn't even read the whole deal.
No,
John
Kerry
said he did
not...
And there can be no
America.
There can be no...
With all due respect, I watched it, and I know what I heard. There is a deal. Our friends, not only in the United States, but in Europe, in China, our friends all around the world are so happy that there is finally a deal, because there has been no deal. There's been absolutely nothing safeguarding our soldiers and our sailors
since
the 1960s. When I'm finished, you can speak. Since the 1960s, when we uprooted the Shah and when we gave Iran to the oil companies, there has not been a deal safeguarding everything. This is the first diplomacy. There's a whole generation in Iran that doesn't believe in death to America. Right. Most of the people in Iran are under 30, and they do not hate
it's
us.
It's unfortunate that they're not in control.
That's right.
That's
and
right. They're not in control. They haven't taken control.
We
haven't supported a rebellion.
Because
time,
we, need to put in, sorry, we need to put
Janie,
internet
Janie's
in there.
Term,
All
term.
Of the young
Janie's
people.
How can you
term,
say
Janie's
this is
term.
A good deal when Israel has reserved the right now to actually go in there and strike and assassinate folks if they need to? That's how serious this is.
Mark,
that's
Mark.
How this is not a good deal.
Well, I would just say that it's not in America's interest. When you watched the Republican debate last night, All I heard were policies telling us to go back the other night, to go back to policies of sanctions that didn't work for so long, that kept a class of people poor and hungry and without jobs. And that's exactly the conditions that are fueling the unrest throughout the
Middle
East.
I'm not concerned about jobs in Iran. I'm concerned about jobs
here
in America.
In the United States.
John Kochelko.
One of the
worst aspects, the
president's statement a couple of days ago, in which he compared Republicans to the, quote, hardliners in Iran, means that he imagines that there are people in Iran who aren't hardliners in the government. The whole government are hardliners. The people with whom he was negotiating are hardliners. It reminded me of the Cold War when they used to say that we had to negotiate with Brezhnev because the hardliners in the Kremlin were on his back. This agreement is a disaster. No Americans can be inspectors. Americans are not going to be part of the inspection team. There is a delay of 24 days in inspecting. And the fact that Israel, the nation that's really under the gun of Iran's nuclear, the fact that they are so adamantly against it should be enough for the United States to reject it.
I want to switch. Go ahead. Last word to you, and I'm going to switch gears about something else.
And then you have your own Democrat Senator Schumer saying, I'm not voting for the deal because it's a bad deal.
But he is not voting for the deal because of the large Jewish population in New York. That's the reason why he's not voting.
Well, there's no doubt that there's a structured roll call in place to make this thing go through. And that's how unprincipled the Democrats are. They will go with a structured roll call rather than really calling the deal what it is, which is a complete failure of policy, a failure in negotiations, by the way.
This should have been presented as a treaty, which would require two-thirds to approve it, not under
that's
this
right.
absurd system where you need two-thirds. You need only one-third plus one to approve it. It's absurd.
When we come back, we're going to talk about Bernie Sanders, we're going to talk about Black Lives Matter, and we're going to talk about why Bernie Sanders seems to be the target of Black Lives Matters within the body politic right at the moment. 1-800-723-8229. We'll also be talking about Hillary and her email. Kitty, get ready. Put your defensive gear on. Back shortly.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
We'll be right back.
for joining us. We're back on the air, folks. We're back on the air. The Masons were not responsible for it. Let's talk about what's happening on the Democratic side. And before we get to Bernie Sanders, before we get to Black Lives Matter, let's talk about the other big political story of the week, and that is Hillary Clinton destroying emails, making a decision as to which emails are destroyed and which ones are not. Kitty Kurth, in your view, is this one of those stories that's going to be drip, 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 like Watergate? And do you think that she is going to be forced out of the race ultimately?
I don't think she's going to be forced out of the race, but I think it's a big problem. And I think like any issue that you're faced with in politics where it's a crisis kind of problem, you need to come out and you need to talk about it and you need to talk about it that day. And I don't think they've done a really good job of doing that. I think the fact that we're still talking about it 6 weeks after we were first talking about it means that it's a problem.
Here's my observation, because a couple of weeks ago on this program, actually last week on this show, we were going to have a representative of the Run, Joe, Run, the draft Biden movement, okay? And Mr. Pierce, who is a friend of yours, that's why I want to ask you this question, Kitty. He was called off the show by the White House, allegedly. Now, my question is, why would they call someone off a show if he was going to talk about a draft movement which is supposed to be independent of any association with a candidate?
Well, I think there is a lot of news that's going to be happening in the next month about what's going on and about whether the vice president will run or not. I think the fact that the vice president is vacationing in South Carolina, South Carolina is a very nice state, but I don't think it's coincidental. And I think there's going to be a lot of new movement. I think there's going to be a lot of movement.
So you will not be surprised if Joe Biden runs for president?
No.
Here's what's not coincidental, and that's the fact that it just frequently has just recently come up that the FBI is probing a criminal investigation of Hillary Clinton's emails and the server. Now, it's not coincidental that now Joe Biden is thinking about getting into the race. I don't see that as coincidental. I see that as a planned strategic move by Obama Biden to take Hillary out of the race.
You have just stolen my analysis. That's what I think. There's enough. First of all, she's going to testify in October before the Benghazi. That's just on Benghazi, and this is bigger than Benghazi. There's emails about Benghazi, and there's some of them have been lost, and then there's the broader issue of the server. What I'm sensing here is that the White House is beginning to plot put the seeds out there, so that when Joe Biden enters the race, he will have the ability to wage a strong campaign. Because, and here's my other thing, the people who have received the emails from Hillary Clinton, some of the ones that were not destroyed, many of them work for the government. Do you believe that the FBI and the NSA and the White House does not know what's on those emails, even the ones that Hillary destroyed? I think they know what's on those tapes, that's the Nixon Association. They know what's on those emails.
Bruce,
and they
got
to find a way to save the Democratic Party from the embarrassment of having Hillary Clinton be the only
Bruce, I just have to say,
this is the most politicized administration ever. I mean, you can look at scandal after scandal. They are hugely politicized. Their FBI is politicized. Their Department of Justice is politicized. I mean, we're talking about, let's go ahead and call out China for cyber warfare. But, oh, by the way, we're going to listen in on Angela Merkel's phone call conversations. These guys are the biggest, they're into everything that's politics, the politicization of the IRS, you name it, scandal after scandal. There's no doubt that they are orchestrating this from above.
If we were anywhere near as organized as you guys think we are, we would never lose an election. But believe me,
do you not believe now, let me pose my question,
because
this is going to check everybody's credibility here. Do you not believe that when the story of the email scandal began to unfold, or issue began to unfold, that someone at the White House, if not the president, someone very close to the president, began to say, oh, my God, she wasn't supposed to be doing that. What is on these 30,000 or 60? There's over 60,000 emails, some of which have been destroyed, some of which have been turned over. What is on these 60,000 emails that could incriminate us, mm-hmm. could incriminate us on Benghazi, could incriminate us on some other issue? Or do you think, you know, there's a story. We better wait to read the New York Times to find out what the next story is. Do you believe that? Do you believe that this administration is so gullible? You know what? I'm going to answer the question. Maybe they are. Maybe they don't know anything about how to deal with email, just like they don't know how to deal with hacking from Chinese.
Look,
they don't know any better.
Bruce, I've never thought that Hillary Clinton had a lock on the Democratic nomination.
You said it on the show.
She is not Bill Clinton. She does not have the charisma that Bill Clinton has in abundance. She is an irritable individual. She's been around forever. And I think that it's quite conceivable. She was the odds-on favorite in 2008, and she blew it and that certainly may happen
Mark
again.
Mark Casella, what about it? Is there something about what I just said that rings true to you?
Well, I would say this. I'm no Hillary Clinton fan, but I think what's going to happen. I agree with you. I think the Obama administration's not dumb. I think that they're out watching for this. But I think here's the thing that maybe John's not thinking of, which is that there is a Hillary Clinton scandal fatigue among voters. We've heard Clinton scandals from, you know, basically my entire life. And so I think that the average American isn't going to differentiate the Benghazi from the email. And I think they're just going to look at Hillary, who's going to go out and clap and smile, and she's going to be shaking hands at Hog
Roast. If Joe Biden gets in, what does Joe Biden do to the race? What is Joe Biden's constituency as you see it, Mark?
So I think Joe Biden has a chance to steal away those voters like me who think Hillary's too far to the right on defense, you know, who's going to carry on these drone bombings and wireless warrantless wiretapping.
Are you saying Hillary's part of the vast right-wing conspiracy that she's always talking about?
Right. And so,
Jeannie, would Joe Biden be a tougher candidate to run against than Hillary Clinton?
I'll tell you what, I would put any of our Republican candidates up against any of the Democrats, and I think we win hands down. They have no record of accomplishment. Joe Biden has done nothing but government work his entire life. He's got nothing to run on. He hasn't created one job that I know of. In fact, as far as I know, he can't spell the word jobs because he couldn't articulate it before. You know, and about this email thing, this is a travesty. We have an email scandal at the University of Illinois, and I know that's getting down a little bit local, but but I'll tell you what, as somebody who sat on city council, you understood that your email was FOIA-able and what that meant. And it included if you used your personal email and they FOIA'd information, you had to turn those over too. You knew that on city council. So this is absolutely it's appalling. It's a travesty. It shows the Obama, Biden, Clinton people have no idea how to govern, and the arguably most transparent government that they wanted to have is the least transparent of all.
If my explanation is not dead on, Kitty, what is the other rationale for Joe Biden to enter into a race and challenge Hillary Clinton?
Joe Biden has been looking at running for president since he became vice president. Joe Biden has never stopped running for president, but when his son got sick, he was diverted and was obviously spending way more attention on his family, as he rightly should have, than on his political future. It wasn't until that situation unfolded that he began to look again at getting into the race. But you can't assume that Joe Biden started looking at running for president 6 weeks ago. Joe Biden never stopped looking at running for president.
Well, here's my question, though. I understand the personal side of it. And we talked about it with Mr. Pierce, who was on the show, the draft Biden guy, and hopefully we'll have him back. But it seems to me that there are people like yourself. You're close to the Biden family. Mr. Pierce was close to the Biden. There's enough people that are good, that are close to Joe Biden. He could have had those people planting seeds, doing all kinds of things, while he rightfully dealt with the issues of a father and a dying son.
Absolutely. But it isn't that. Will Pierce started Draft Biden because he was a veteran who loved Joe Biden, loved how Joe Biden has treated the veterans, how he's funded community colleges and how he's fought for community colleges, his foreign policy experience. The draft Biden.
Foreign policy experience?
32 years on the Foreign Policy Committee. It's pretty serious. The draft Biden, he's met every world leader. He's talked with every world leader. He knows them by name. They know him.
Most of those are dead, though, now. I mean, the people he was dealing with 30 years ago
are
gone.
And he's still dealing with them now. I mean, I've been several places with him overseas in the last 6 years where they know him and he knows them. But getting back, it really is the draft Biden movement really is a draft movement.
That's great, but you know, for him being overseas, what has that gotten us now? The world is far less safe today than we were.
That's just not true.
Marco Rubio is dead.
How many people have gotten killed under
trust us? No, trust us. You respect us.
There's no red line. There's no. I am a fact. I do look at that.
Mark. No, back to this. Allies don't trust us. I mean, I remember the Bush years. I don't know where everybody else is.
And a lot of Americans were killed at 9/11 too.
That was not when Obama was president, and it was not when Joe Biden was vice president. Kill them.
I'm simply saying that there was a reason why Bush was retaliating and waging war. I happen to think he made mistakes, but to say we killed a lot of people, we killed a lot more people when FDR was president, when Harry Truman was president, and when Lyndon Johnson was president. Democrats get very upset.
From Chicago, gotta go.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for being with us. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. And our other guests this evening are Kitty Kurth.
Kitty Kurth from Kurth Lampe Worldwide. Jeannie Ives. I'm from Wheaton. I'm a state, Illinois state representative.
Mark Casello.
Mark Casello from America's one of America's newest national parks, the Pullman Historic District in Chicago, and professor at Calumet College of St. Joseph.
John Kuchelko.
John S. Kuchelko served on the Cicero Town Board for many years, and I am a resident of the town of Cicero.
We have talked about Hillary Clinton. We've talked about the emails and what I said during the break. What this reminds me of in the early days, this reminds me of Watergate. There's an incident. A member of Congress starts to ask questions about it. They start to dig. One party says the other party is doing it only as a witch hunt, that there was nothing really there. And then drip, 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 things lead. Sometimes it takes a year, maybe a year and a half. You know, the break-in was 1972, and, you know, the impeachment started about a year later. And Richard Nixon resigned on this day, August 9th, 1974. This is when Gerald Ford became president, on this day. But it took a long time, and I'm sensing, and part of it is not only is the news coming out, but, John, you may not like what I'm about to say, a lot of this news is coming out from the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
true.
Think the conservatives around the table would say the New York Times isn't necessarily believable, but the New York Times, just as the Washington Post, you know, in the Nixon situation, I mean, there was a respected newspaper that that was basically would say was, or Hillary Clinton's case, maybe turning on someone that conservatives might think is one of their own. But the reality is they're following the story, and it's one of the things that is causing these other things to be happening, I think, within the party. And if Hillary is forced to out of this race at some point, I would not be terribly surprised by that.
I am not willing to write any candidate, Republican or Democratic, off before we've had any elections. I think we should wait until
I totally agree with that.
Having said that, if you recall about 2 years ago when I was on this show, I said that I didn't. My gut feeling was that Hillary might not be the Democratic nominee, and everybody looked at me like I was insane, and it wasn't because of any special knowledge. It was just my political instinct, and she may well be the nominee still, but I'm just not sure of it. I just don't – I'm not – I think that
but
there's
you, but would
a
you
long
acknowledge right now, would
now
you would you acknowledge
her?
That if she is the nominee – she will be a damaged nominee. She'll be a damaged nominee because of the email story. She'll be a damaged nominee because of Bernie Sanders.
Yes, but I don't think because of Bernie Sanders, because I think Bernie Sanders, it will elevate the debate. I think Bernie will talk about issues. It will be interesting.
And she will
ignore
them.
People on the Democratic side. No, I don't think so. I think it will pull her to the left, which will be better for the base of her party, our party, the Democrats. I think it will make her a much stronger candidate. And if you look at demographics, it's not good for the Republicans.
There's nothing good
because,
about Hillary Clinton.
Because their demographics of who's going to vote in 2016 are younger, more every color of the rainbow and more women, which is not good for the Republicans.
Well, I think you're dismissing women as just somebody who votes based on gender. I think women are a lot more intuitive and a lot more better at looking at somebody and understanding if they're authentic individuals. There's nothing authentic about Hillary Clinton. These scandals, she can't even run from them fast enough. Okay, even if she's wearing flats and not high heels, I'm telling you, Benghazi, the Clinton cash scandal, I mean, it goes on and on and on. She is damaged goods, and I think that they know it, and so they're bringing Biden in.
There's something very important to consider, which is America is a fundamentally different nation socially and culturally than it was 4 or 8 years ago. We've got legalized marijuana in Colorado and Washington. We've got gay marriage. So many things have shifted to the left. We got free community college in some states. You've got things just moving to the left, and a younger demographic coming up. And
you, you can't run on this. The biggest thing is, again, it's the economy, stupid. So we're back to, they have no record on jobs. You're still down 2.4 million jobs. 2.4 million jobs. And so if you say the stock market is doing great, guess who's that, that plays into? That plays into the wealthy corporate elite, the Wall Street folks that you're talking about. And so they've been very
all
good to the Wall
economy,
Street folks.
Wait,
no,
the
economy is a disaster.
Bruce, you're absolutely right about the New York Times. I think there's a sense in the Democratic Party, we've heard it here, that Hillary is not far enough to the left. I mean, this will come as a surprise to a lot of Republicans. But there are a lot of people in the Democratic Party who do not look back fondly on the Clinton years. Remember, Bill Clinton won the nomination as a centrist Democrat, as something of a conservative Democrat back
in a three-way race.
That's right, in 1992. They don't want to go back to the Clinton years. They want someone where the Democratic Party is today, which is way to the left. And that's one of the things that is, I think, going mm-hmm. to be helpful to the Republican Party, because the nation does not want a country that is
right.
way to the left.
A quick follow-up question to you. Most people agree or say, the political pundits, that if Donald Trump ran as a third-party candidate, it would automatically mean that Hillary Clinton would be the next president. Do you believe that? In a three-way race, if there was a Republican nominee, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, does Donald Trump take only Republican votes?
Not necessarily. I don't think that it elects the Democratic candidate, Hillary or anybody else. It causes problems for the Republican candidate that he would not want to have. But I don't think it necessarily elects – because remember that was said about John Anderson, that having John Anderson in the race was going to pull Republican votes, and that didn't work in 1980.
Mark Casello, let's get back to Bernie Sanders now again. He seems to be taking the brunt of the frustration of the Black Lives Matter movement. There's been a couple of moments, including the other day, when he literally couldn't continue with the rally, even though there was about 15,000 people there, because of Black Lives. They got up there and they took over the stage. Why is everyone focusing on Bernie Sanders, and why are they not asking the same questions of Hillary Clinton and Michael O'Malley?
Because Bernie Sanders has the mantle of being the truth teller. And if the truth teller, if the person to the farthest left can't get things right, then who can? And so he's supposed to be, you know, I think in following at least, you know, the people I read, there's a sense that Bernie Sanders is a lost cause, but we're glad that the voice is out there having a conversation. And I would just say, you know, for example, there was a lot of talk in the Republican debate about entitlements and Medicaid and food stamps and that old rhetoric. The thing Bernie Sanders brings to conversation is questions about corporate subsidies, the fact that the reason people are on Medicaid and food stamps is because corporations don't pay people very well. And Jeannie's right about the stock market's doing well.
Why is not Black Lives Matter? Why are they not pressing Hillary Clinton? Is it because she's not out there?
She never appears in public.
She
ropes people off. They would be roped off with everybody else.
Did you see the parade where they roped people off from the parade people?
They're very logistically smart, the Black Lives Matter people. They know that there's more media and more people at the Sanders rally, so they're going to where the media and the people are. The Martin O'Malley events, there aren't that many people. And there aren't that many cameras. So why should they go there when they won't get the attention?
What should Bernie Sanders' answer be, Mark? Because you support Bernie Sanders and you support Black Lives Matter. He's not giving them the answer they want. What is the answer they want, meaning the group?
Well, I can't speak for the group Black Lives Matter, but living on the south side of Chicago, I can tell you more police, better training of police, as Scott Walker said, is not the answer to a systemic and cultural issue we have in this
better
nation.
Training
I'm
of
glad
police.
To hear you say it's a cultural issue.
It's a cultural issue. Better training of police, for example. Scott Walker said, we just need to train the police better. When you have so many innocent African-Americans being killed, or for example, Sandra Bland, in Texas, she sounded like Rand Paul before she was arrested. She sounded like a libertarian. And that's something I want to see Rand Paul. I want to see some people on the far right, libertarian street, coming out and joining with this cause. This is a
they
question
are.
Of
Rand Paul's been talking about this for a year.
But here we go
half.
Again. Here's why Hillary Clinton can't answer this question. She's already been endorsed by one of the teacher unions. What have the unions done to save blacks absolutely abysmal school situation we have on the south side of college or of Chicago, where, you know, 2/3 of fourth graders don't read at math at grade level. So, I mean, they have not answered this question. They have
Bill
been
Clinton
Obama administration has been horrible
created,
in terms
Bill
of
Clinton admitted
saving blacks,
creating this, you know, prison problem with
yes.
with his crime bill. So I think they don't really have room to talk on it, but they do need the critique. But I think the time will come.
They
later.
Don't have room to talk about it, but yet they get away with it.
In
other words, well, Bill Clinton seems to get away with a lot of stuff.
You know,
he signed DOMA. He got away with that, too.
Right.
I mean, in other words, if you're going to look at Hillary Clinton as the First Lady of the United States, you should be looking at Hillary Clinton and what influence, if any, she had on her husband and the policies. All the Democrats want to do is talk about the great economic times and all the good things that happened during the Clinton administration. There were some bad things that happened to people that are effectively locked in as a constituent to the Democratic Party. Bill Clinton was the president when some of those things happened.
You're asking the wrong question, Bruce. Maybe you should look at why is Bernie Sanders getting 15,000 people at his rallies and Hillary Clinton
because he's so far to the left. Because the Democratic Party had no
limit.
Because
he's in bed with corporate America. She's in bed with the corporate.
She is totally
in bed with Wall
Street.
Here is a man who is an avowed socialist.
No,
a social
Democrat.
He is an avowed socialist.
He is a social Democrat.
And the fact that's a distinct
he spent his honeymoon in Soviet Russia, according to George Will.
It's a distinction without a difference. The fact that he is the primary challenger, the fact that he is the primary. May I finish? I didn't interrupt you. I'd like to be able to finish what I'm saying. The fact that an avowed socialist is the primary contender against Hillary Clinton tells you where the Democratic Party has
yes.
moved during the last 6 years.
Yes, and where the
country
is.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. By the way, if there was ever a reason why you should have the stream on, we have had an incredible conversation during the breaks tonight. Very, very heated conversation. And then when the mics go on, they think they're not going to be heard. But everything that you said for the last 5 minutes has been heard as well. But Jeannie, you wanted to ask a follow up question or
I did want to make a point here, and here's where the Republicans really can show that they do care about the minorities and what and how good that they are. I mean, look what Jeb Bush did on the voucher program that really helped minorities get good education. But Scott Walker has a really important story to tell, and that has to deal with Polly Williams. Polly Williams, a black state legislator who actually initiated the first voucher program in the state of Wisconsin, and something that Scott Walker has expanded. I want to hear him talk about that, because that is the program that really does support the minority communities, giving them real choices on education, not based on their income level or their zip code. That's how we show that we do care about educating them. And I was at a Rand Paul event at at Josephinium Academy about a year ago, where he came and talked about school choice, and everybody in there was minority, either Latino or black at that academy, and they're all there on scholarship. And it was very heartwarming to see how enthusiastic they were about getting that education and not one from CPS.
Well, Mark.
There's a strategic disinvestment in the black community in Chicago that's been going on for the past 30, 40 years.
And that's sad.
And in Illinois, if you watch television, and I'm sure that you're seeing this nationwide, there's a move to privatize education and move it to online charter schools. Online charter schools, where who knows who's doing the work. It's very scary. And I work in education, and I see the results of students coming from a variety of schools. Charter schools can be good. There's nothing inherently bad about charter schools, but what happens, for example, in Illinois is when we shortchange the public schools in order to privilege the charters, and then
that is absolutely not happening.
No, that's absolutely the fact.
No, it's not. I sit on the K-12 Appropriations Committee, and I can guarantee you that they're not getting shortchanged. And they've gone to a per-student requirement in CPS and allocating the resources, so it's based on a per-student, which is more fair than anything else.
I want to come back to broader national issues. And, John, I want to come back to you, and I want to sort of end the show where we started the program, and that is because people may have tuned in late. And that is the role that Donald Trump is playing now. And some of the national media, they're figuring out, when is he going to begin to peter out? Do you not think he's going to peter out?
We don't know how this is going to develop. I mean, the fact that he is getting over 20% of the vote or 20% of support in the polls in a 17-member race indicates that he has a great deal of support. The fact that those who were designated front runners are showing so poorly indicates that he is, as they say, striking a chord. The Republican Party is tired of polite, dignified losers. They want a man who fights. The fact that Trump doesn't back down when he's challenged, the fact that he hits back, is something that is very appealing to Republicans. I don't know who the nominee is going to be, but I think that he's bringing energy to the campaign. He certainly, I think, was in great deal responsible for the huge numbers of viewers that tuned into that first debate. He may be helping the party by attracting other people who would not ordinarily watch a Republican debate. So right now, I think you have the fact that the other candidates don't seem eager to take him on. We were told in advance that they were going to try to take out Trump. I think a lot of the conservatives understand that if Trump is forced out of the race, the media is going to concentrate its fire on the first conservative to emerge from the pack. If it's Rubio or Cruz or Huckabee, whoever it is, they're going to get the same kind of abuse that Trump is now getting from the major media. So
but
I don't think they're eager to get him forced out.
A lot of Trump's abuse by the media is self-inflicted.
As I say, he because of the fact that he has not run for office before, he's going to say things off the top of his head that seasoned politicians have learned to be more circumspect about. But the flip side of that is a lot of voters are tired of circumspect politicians. They want someone who speaks bluntly.
I want to go back to Joe Biden. What will be the rationale for Biden if he runs? I mean, there's three Democrats that are out there. One is getting, 15,000 people at his rallies. The other is Michael O'Malley,
Martin O'Malley,
who's not a significant factor so much so that I don't even know his first name. And then there's Hillary Clinton, who's got the lock. But again, she's also got an albatross around her neck, perhaps with this scandal. What is his rationale for entering the race? Does he enter the race by saying, there's three losers out there, and I'm the only one that can save the Democratic Party. Isn't that what he's really saying if he jumps in?
No, what he's saying is experience, experience, experience. And I want to go
more
back,
so
though,
than
to Trump. Yes, he's got a lot more political experience than Hillary. But I want to go back for a minute to Donald Trump, because if he would indeed be the nominee, there could be no greater gift to the Democratic Party than Donald Trump as the nominee.
Could it be as big a gift as Ronald Reagan was?
Yeah, bear in mind the Democrats said that about Ronald Reagan.
It's a much
Jimmy
different
Carter
situation.
Jimmy Carter felt that way about Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. And yeah. Also the third party, I think that it could be very helpful to the Democrats, but not necessarily guarantee victory. Although if you remember, Perot being in against Clinton and Dole was very helpful to Clinton in 1992.
What about Bernie Sanders? Would he consider running as a third or fourth party candidate if he really felt strongly about his issues?
No.
I don't think he's going to. No.
He's not
going to
be affected by Joe Biden getting into the race, is he?
No, I don't. But eventually he'll see that he has.
Is it important to have a woman president? I mean, is Joe Biden going to consider that by entering in the race, he could be perceived and portrayed as a man who's standing in the way of a woman making her way to the White House?
I think that's been his biggest hesitancy and why he didn't get in the race.
If we do have a Biden,
or three years ago, I think that is absolutely his biggest hesitancy, that he doesn't want to be seen as anti-woman. But, and that's why I think the whole tenor of the debate...
Is it important to have a woman president?
I think it's critically important to have a woman president, not only to me, but more importantly to the... You know, you have to look at the demographics of who's going to be voting in 2016.
We need a strong and capable president.
The people who voted for Barack Obama
whatever
in 2008
gender.
And 2016 want to see a woman president.
So if Biden were to run against Carly Fiorina, then would being a woman still be important? On that note, we want to say farewell to Kitty Kurth and Mark Cosello, John Kuchelko, and Jeannie Ives. Thanks very much for being with us. This program is a Gen B production produced in association with WCGO. Our thanks to the ever-popular Dan Dorfman and Colin Bobbitt and Fritz Goldman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
What does it take to start something? A little time. A little exercise. A little laugh. A little adventure. A little help. That's all it takes to make a big impact.
As he always talks about, he had people in his life that really helped him out, and he wants to be that person in my life.
Just like he is, I was like that at 14. I know exactly what it means to be a 14-year-old guy.
I think that's why we have a good relationship.
He's fun and cool and nice.
You get to see, like, how personality develops.
Our friendship is good.
At Big Brothers Big Sisters, a little bit of your support can go a long way towards making matches like these happen. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org/startsomething.